academic services at Hull, and I work in a group called the E-Services Integration Group, but I'll come to that in a minute. So briefly, I want to consider something about the ubiquity of the web in this day, how we've taken an approach over the last 3 or 4 years to managing this, including something on organisational change, as Brian has mentioned. Then move on to something about service-oriented approaches and how Web 2.0, Web 2 and portals can perhaps work together and suggest ways forward. So if we think about the ubiquitous web, I mean, we are dealing with students now, this idea of the Amazugle generation. These people have grown up with the web. They've known Amazon, they've known Google, probably for most of their educational life, certainly since they've been at comprehensive school and at university for the traditional undergraduates. And you get this feeling that really people, they just expect stuff to be on the web. I mean, Oleg quoted the 60% broadband take-up. Another a very anecdotal example is my eight-year-old son, whenever we're talking about something, if he wants to find out, says, oh, we'll just go to the web and find out about it. There really is this understanding from the young generations onwards that it's all just going to be there for you. I think this was very well illustrated by a recent help query we had about the library catalogue at Hull, where they said, the student said, it's very good. I mean, I like the fact that I can find the titles that I need in the library, but when I actually click on the link to show me more details, can I please see a colour picture of the cover and maybe a review and maybe what other people have thought of that book? Yeah, and it was laughable in one way, but actually it so easily summed up the problems that you think the library systems we're using in those terms, they're 10 years behind. They don't give people what they're used to and what they expect. So what we really have is a huge challenge to institutions here. And you see I've got two bullets there. I'm going to skip the second one of these. Obviously, if we are going to have a ubiquitous web, if everything is going to be on the web, we have to address issues around how we manage all of this web-based content. And in 20 minutes, we don't have time really to talk about that. So I really want to think a bit more about how we can look at the technologies to provide this internet-based delivery. So how do you start to manage this? We have at Hull, we started in 2001 with this idea. We had a single unified presentation layer, the portal layer that we have here. And we developed this and we moved this forward. And we've actually been running live as a service to all of our staff and students at the university. So that's about 20,000 users since September of 2003. And you can see the way this architecture worked with the portal. Effectively, we've developed a lot of integration pieces for all of the different applications that we want to surface for our staff and students. So we've got integration across HR and student records. When you log into the portal, you can see your web-based version of email. The inbox is available for you within the portal. We also have a very rudimentary interface to library systems. And also, we've aggregated a lot of content from across useful and relevant websites in the university. So as we started this work, we really had to think about, you know, what is a portal, what does it deliver? And there's a few key words in this. I think the first of these is it's a secure area. It's somewhere where you log into once and you know you're in a secure environment, and from there we can seamlessly give you access to a whole range of other applications based on that security. It aggregates, it integrates, personalises and presents. It's not just information, but it is a transaction and applications. And also, we're moving towards this idea of it's personalised already because it knows who you are when you log into the portal. So in terms of self-provisioning, if you move house as a quick example, you can then go in and change your home address via the portal. But it's not just about that, it's also about the roles that you have across the university. And we're working towards much more role-based customization within the portal. But it's also about things like your location. We have two campuses at Hull. If you're at the Scarborough campus, you want to see different information than you do at the Hull campus. And also your personal preferences. You know, when you log into the portal, at the moment, by default, you get shown a BBC newsfeed on the left-hand column. Some people don't want that. That's fine. They can remove that from their layout, so the next time they log in, they don't see the BBC feed. Very briefly, in terms of running the portal service, we use open source software at Hull. We had a brief discussion, John and I, this morning about the cost of this. the costs were easy to sell to senior managers at Hull because they were hidden costs. It was about redeployment of staff. We're actually using a... You might need to scrub that from the recording. We're actually using a product called Youth Portal, which is from a consortium called the JASIG, Java Architecture Special Interest Group. And this is a consortium of mainly North American-based institutions that got together, decided they all had a common need for a portal, and they got together and they've actually developed this portal framework over the last 5 or 6 years. It's based on some fairly core technology, so it uses Java, XML, and SSL. I also, as we've just mentioned the cost, I wanted to touch briefly on the staffing that we've worked on to A, get the portal to launch, and then B, what happens now as we run it as a service. Up to launch, we probably had the equivalent of a 1.5 FTE over 18 months. Now that was covering an awful lot of different pieces of the picture. So this was people like database administrators, systems administrators, Java programmers, people who understood something about the portal framework itself. And then since then, when we've been live, we have one core developer who works full-time on new developments. This is new applications and integrating new software as it comes into the university, into the portal. And we have about the equivalent of a half-time FTE working on maintenance of the framework and, to an extent, content and running the support of the portal. Brian mentioned, touched very briefly on organisational adaptation. I work for Academic Services. We're a converged directorate, so we're responsible for the library services across the university, the computing services, which is desktop applications, file and print, the network, email, etc. And our corporate systems are MIS people and the archives that are affiliated with the libraries. And effectively, with the best one in the world, everyone works in their own organisational unit, in their own little silo, fairly comfortably, and they get on with the job they're assigned. What we found is once we introduced this idea of a portal layer, which becomes this unified presentation layer at the high level, it's also an integration layer. We had to actually start to work much more broadly across academic services with different people from the different units. So when it was about 3 years ago, East Services Integration Group was formed, the Director of Academic Services actually decided that we would effectively sit as a very light layer across all of these units, which means that we're very much part of the day-to-day of what we do is liaison with people in these units, and we're also working to a model which has worked to an extent so far of occasional secondment. So we have a day a week of someone's time from the MIS group or from the computing services group. So we're really trying to pull people together as we work for the portal. I just wanted this as a sort of sideline. We still deal with the day-to-day within IS services. Not everything is about the web. There's still, as I've mentioned, people still want to use Microsoft Word on a daily basis and save that file to somewhere on a network drive that they know is going to be backed up, and they want to get a hard copy of it. They want to be able to print it out. So within the work that we're doing at Hull, our computing services people are actually, if you like, almost doing the antithesis of the kind of things we're starting to do with the portal, where we're pulling together all these divergent, heterogeneous technologies, and they're actually adopting a single technology vendor. They're taking Microsoft, they're using the MOM and SMS Microsoft technologies, and they're rolling out this homogeneous environment for the desktop. And they are looking to provide resilient and reliable systems that have what they're describing as the built-in redundancy. But what we're finding as part of this is there is a cultural change at this point. So what we're saying is you may have, for the last 5 years, have managed your own PC, you may have downloaded browser X or software application Y that's crashed your Windows, and we've come along and tried to fix your Windows PC or ended up re-imaging it, whatever we've had to do. But actually, we're not going to do that anymore. This is the desktop we're going to offer you, and it's going to be managed centrally. So this, for a lot of people, I think they will appreciate the issues around that, hopefully. They will appreciate the issues around that and understand the reasoning behind that. But critically within this, we still need to have a hybrid, so there is still the opportunity, if you want to use GreaseMonkey, which is a Firefox extension, to amend your own HTML pages, you can do that, but at that point you have to accept that you will actually become a self-supporting user. You're going to start supporting your own PC because our central services can't guarantee they can get that to work. Okay, Oleg's mentioned service-oriented architecture, which is a fantastic introduction to this sort of lower level thing. Thanks for that, Oleg. The service-oriented approach is focused around, rather unsurprisingly, services. So what are these services? We really see these services, they're individual components. These things are self-contained, they're discrete and independent, which means they're loosely coupled, so you can combine and recombine them into composite services at a later date. Within these services, each service must have this idea of a well-defined interface. So effectively, there's a standards-based contract that service will publish, which means if you want the service to go and do, say, X, you have to pass it a certain number of parameters, and then it will pass you back what you require in a particular format. And also critically, as we move in these generally and usually heterogeneous environments, they are implementation independent. You can write these things as long as you conform to the service contract. You can write things in Java, you can write it in PHP, you can write it in .NET. You know, whatever language you choose that has a web services interface, you can write to that. I have mentioned they do, there is certainly from the initial work that was done on SOAP, there was this assumption that they would have to be web services and SOAP, but I think that's softening over time. You find more and more people working with service-oriented architectures that are really using HTTP often and XML messaging. And also, as Oleg mentioned, when you start talking to the people that are responsible for the business of the university, they can see this process-oriented approach that they have. They can see it maps very conveniently for them. It's a way they can understand that it actually maps across to this service-oriented approach. So what we see now, if we think about the architecture that we had before, where we had all these things at the bottom talking directly to the portal, we now move to a much more flexible architecture. So we have, within HR, student records and library systems, there's a web services interface to these. Now, using this middleware layer, we can do what they call in the service-oriented arena, we can orchestrate across these services, so we can pull together disparate services into a composite, meaningful service for our end users. And from there, these can be surfaced in the portal. Now, within the portal, we may also want to have this idea of rich internet applications, which I'll come on to again in a minute. This idea of a better user interface, much more like the kind of interface people find when they use desktop applications. But also significantly within this architecture, we still have the flexibility, so we can still take the email system directly to the portal if we want to, or we can take it via the web services. So there's a built-in flexibility with this approach. The other thing I've added in this diagram now is this, it's called JISC outcomes there, but this is really the ideas Oleg has referenced. There is the e-learning framework projects, there's the framework, there's also projects in the e-framework that are producing these services, which you can now take and plug into your own architecture. You don't need to host them at Hull, they could perhaps be hosted on a server that's run by the JISC or run by another institution, but you can start to take these services from around the country and elsewhere and start to plug them into what you do at your institution. Very briefly, because I'm running out of time here, a practical example of this is at Hull we have an institutional repository project funded by the JISC, which is looking to enhance our repository, which is based on Fedora, an open source software product, and we're looking to build workflow across this repository. So you can see here at the bottom level we have an institutional repository which has access and management API. So this is the functionality for searching across objects within the repository and ingesting, updating and deleting objects in the repository. And all of this API functionality is available via a web service. So what we can do at the middleware layer is we can use some standards. Standard in particular is the BEPL or BEPL, depending on how you want to pronounce it, which is Business Process Execution Language. And this is a means of defining how the workflow actually sequences itself. So which service it calls, what it expects back from that service, and what happens step by step. So what we're going to do with this is we're actually going to surface this in a presentation layer. We're going to use the portal, as I've already mentioned. And we're also going to look to surface this in Sakai, which is a collaboration and learning environment. It's another open source project that's coming out of North America, which is gaining quite a lot of interest at the moment. So how are we going to take, I've talked about what we've done in the past with the portal. How are we going to take the portal forward at Hull? When you start to work on with portals in particular, find there's a fairly critical piece missing, certainly at Hull, it's this idea of identity management. You need a central place where you know you can find definitive information about someone, whether they're a member of staff or a student, or whether they're one of this vast number of sort of affiliated, associated people you find at university. So that's something we need, and once we've got that, we can also use that for modelling ad hoc groups across the university, which means we've got much finer grained control over what people can see within the portal. I mentioned richer user interfaces, and we also want to move to the more sophisticated differentiation. So once the identity management's in place, we can look much more at roles and responsibilities, individual processes for those roles, and also starting to think, what device is it running on? You know, not everyone's going to be using a laptop or a desktop PC to access these things. More and more mobile devices are going to be used. So to finish off, just briefly about Web 2.0 and portals. The O'Reilly paper, I think, Brian, you've got a diagram from that in your presentation this afternoon. Tim O'Reilly, was it October last year? Something like that, has produced probably the definitive Web 2.0 paper. And he identified a number of key elements of Web 2.0. And when you look at those, you can see there's a fairly clear match between those and what we're trying to do with portals. So obviously strategic positioning, this idea that the web as a platform and the portal conforms tightly with that, but also the user positioning. So you as the user inside the portal or as a user of Web 2 functionality, you actually control your own data. You have full control over that. It's not managed by someone somewhere else, it's yours. And also a number of competencies. We've mentioned the services, so we're talking about these composite services, not packaged software. Also, I like this phrase, the architecture of participation. You know, something like a portal at a university is in its driest sense very much about online administration and learning and teaching. But it's also about online communities. It's about meeting other people with similar interests across the university or providing spaces for people who already know each other with a common interest. And also this idea of cost-effective scalability. So it's a portal, it's open source. I think we've started to prove at Hull and lots of other institutions have with similar projects that these things really do scale across tens of thousands of users. Very, very briefly, if you've got a lot of money like Stanford have, you can set up iTunes. So Stanford on iTunes, effectively, when you go to the Apple iTunes library, you can see a whole range of materials from Stanford, which includes things like academic lectures, updates on what is happening across the campus, those kinds of things. And the reason I included this slide here is this idea of it's almost online, offline, pure web-based versus desktop-based. So you can see that we're building towards a hybrid across those. So final slide, we're talking about Web 2, we're talking about also how does this move beyond, if you like, I mean, they're only 5 years old, but traditional portals. I think we are talking about things that can also be used on the desktop, so you do get the opportunity to work offline. The Stanford iTunes is a classic example. If your lecturer's put a recent lecture up that you missed, you can go online, download it to your laptop or your PC, whatever you're using. And then from there, you can either listen to it on that or plug it into your iPod or MP3 player and walk around campus listening to the lecture if that's what you want to do. Another illustration of that is the Sakai have produced an OS X widget. So this widget just sits on your Apple desktop and effectively goes away and queries the Sakai learning management system, comes back, and the widget tells you in real time what's actually going on in the courses that you enroll with. I think this idea of desktop versus web, I don't think either is exclusive. There will be a mixture of uses depending on who you are, what you want to do at any point in time. And finally, I think the other thing we have to bear in mind, which is something we can't harness in this sort of when we're thinking about divergent technologies, really is this idea of Web 2 is, in part at least, it's about creativity, and the potential is infinite. I was at a Web2 workshop a couple of weeks ago in London, and a guy from Yahoo was demonstrating this idea. They've got a what they're calling a mashup, where it's a mash of two particular services or data sets that are coming together, and they put together the Yahoo News and the Yahoo Astrology data set, so you could see what was happening, for example, on any particular day in the news. You know, was it a good day for people who were born under the Aries sign? Was it a good day for Capricorns? And also the inverse of that, based on the astrological predictions, you know, if it said for Pisces you were going to meet a tall, dark, handsome stranger today, were the Pisceans in the news who were having sort of romantic interests being surfaced? So this idea that you can really put anything together with anything to produce something at the end which has potentially a use that you may see in what you're doing. And just finally, that very briefly, because I have gone over, apologies, Dan, we're really looking at this. I think something like the portal will continue. There's an awful lot of standards out there that have been used in the world of portals, things like the web services for remote portlets that really enable you to bring in some of those syndicated services such as Yahoo News and bring them into either your desktop or to your portal within the browser in the future. Okay, apologies for running, but that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. I think time for one quick question before while I get up the next slide. Anyone? John, you asked. Yeah.
Well, in terms of product, it's we're going to look at the Sun Identity Management solution. In terms of what it will actually do, I think it's still very early days. Every time we talk about this, we come up with a slightly different picture and a slightly different scenario. But effectively, certainly at the heart of that, we want to have this idea of a definitive directory, but not a directory that warehouses all of this information, but this idea of a meta directory which stores the rules for how you go and get that definitive data. Yeah, does that make sense? And then there's also the identity management piece of that. It's this idea of synchronizing across synchronization and provision. So